That's what she said.
That's what she said.
That's what she said.
That's what she said. Well, that's what she said.
Welcome into the latest edition of That's What She Said with Sarah Spain. Happy to welcome the newest member of the Chicago Sky, Stephanie Dolson, to the podcast today. Talk about how she ended up here in Chicago after being with the Mystics for several years. Her expectations for the season, get to know her a little bit before the start of the WNBA season. And I have to admit, I was excited to find that if Elena Deladon was going to force her way out of the city and we were getting somebody in return, that it was Steph. I've met her at the ESPYs, worked with her a little when she was playing for UConn. She came on His and Hers, and she's a huge personality. She's super funny and outgoing. She, you know, dyes her hair crazy colors and is really into fashion and really into expressing herself in ways that are whatever she feels. She doesn't worry about fitting in to the norm. But that being said, as much as it was good that Dolson was the one coming back, I'm still kind of in denial about Elena Deladon leaving, to be honest with you. When they post stuff on Twitter, whether it's the Mystics or the WNBA or Elena herself posting, I can't quite get it through my head that she's no longer on the team. And I still want to root for her as a player with the Mystics, but obviously my fandom is here in Chicago. And I think that that's a really tough position that I've rarely been in sports. There's been great players. Like, I just had it with Dexter Fowler going to the Cardinals. So the Cubs finally win the World Series, and then their leadoff guy, you go, we go, a guy that, like, loved his personality, his approach to the game and everything he did for the team, leaves and goes to the enemy, the worst possible place, St. Louis. But Dexter wasn't the biggest star on the team. He wasn't the face of the franchise. And it's been really tough adjusting to, like, being drawn to the Sky, mainly because of Deladon and because I love her style of play. And I've always been really into sort of the big man who can shoot the three and dribble, because as a center myself in high school ball and a power forward in AAU, I always liked to, like, be quicker and faster and more skilled technically than the big girls I was facing. And so I loved watching Deladon be 6'5 and be able to play like a point guard in so many ways. So I'm still a little depressed. But that being said, here in Chicago, we're going to give Steph every option to come in and make us love her. I know I read one longtime writer in Connecticut say that she just, her job is to be a bundle of joy, or a bucket of joy, I suppose. And she brings that everywhere she goes. So I'm hoping that that's what happens for the Sky, because it's obviously a huge blow to lose league MVP and a player that incredibly sort of changed, that turned the franchise around, changed the way the city sort of looked at the WNBA. So here's my conversation with Steph, and let's hope, cross our fingers, that she'll do as much for the team as Elena did. Here it is.
That's what she said.
Happy to be joined by former UConn great, former Washington Mystics all-star, now the center for my hometown Chicago Sky, Stephanie Dolson. What's going on, Steph?
Nothing much. Just enjoying the city of Chicago.
Yeah, I want to know, what's like the first thing you did when you got to your new hometown?
Ooh, I haven't had the deep dish pizza yet, but I did go to Michigan Ave, and I did some damage to my wallet, which was not a good idea. But I'm happy I did. So it's been really great. The city's been great. Traffic isn't the greatest, I have to say. The traffic.
Got to get used to it. It's all about timing here. It's all about figuring out where you go, whether you should take a cab or the subway, or, you know, whether you can drive and park, because parking will get you. It'll be like $30 for 15 minutes.
Yeah, I learned that yesterday. I almost was going to get a ticket instead of paying for it, because I figured it would be the same amount. It
might be cheaper. Right. So do you know any of your new teammates, and can they help you with things like that?
I do know some of them. I had never previously played with any of them or been with them for a long period of time. Cappy and Allie and Slew, I played with during USA Basketball. But other than that, I mean, that was the most I knew. I didn't know any of the other players. But Cappy's from Chicago, so she's been telling me all these places that we're going to go and that she's going to show me. So I'm excited for the summer. I mean, we've only been here for, like, a month, maybe? And I've already done some stuff. So it should be a fun summer.
Yeah, and it gets better in the summer because we've had a couple of those tease days where it's been 65 or 70 and sunny, but only for a day and then right back down to like 45 where you've got your hat and gloves
out.
So you got to get like, in.
Yeah.
So you have a poodle named Theo, which I don't know if you know this, but that's a great name for your dog. And if anyone asks you, just lie and say that you named it after the Cubs president, because he's basically the savior and king and god of everything in Chicago right now after they won. So that'll really ingratiate you to the hometown people.
That's what someone told me, the same thing. I think someone on Twitter asked me that question, and I was like, no, it's Theodore after the chipmunk. And they said, no, it's after Theo from the Cubs. And I was like,
yes.
Oh. Okay.
Yes. Stick with that. I just say that because, you know, Elena Deladon arrived. She immediately got some pizza and then she named her dog Wrigley. Like, she really knew the playbook here in Chicago. She knew what to do. So you have to figure out what things we need you not to insult our pizza, and we need you to really get on board with the other Chicago teams.
To not insult your pizza.
Yes.
I'll do my best. I mean, I like pizza in general, so I'm sure I'll love it no matter
what.
Okay,
good. Good. There's been some blaspheming from people like Pau Gasol saying it's a cake made of cheese. And then I said, what could be better than a cake made of cheese? I ask you.
I was just going to say that. What's wrong with that? That
yeah,
sounds like an
exactly.
amazing thing.
Exactly. So you come to the Sky at an interesting time. They fired a longtime coach and GM, Pokey Chapman. She was here for six seasons, the last four of which were successful. Playoff appearances, a trip to the 2014 finals. Last year they made it to the semis. Unfortunately, Elena Deladon had that thumb injury. So you're coming in with a brand new head coach and GM in Amber Stocks. Have you had a real chance to connect and get to know her yet?
I have. I've, you know, spent a lot of time with her on and off the court. I was here about a week, 2 weeks before training camp even started. So I got to do some individual workouts with her and the other coaches. And she's great. I mean, she has a great attitude. She's coming in with kind of a fresh mind. And almost a new way to approach the game, you know, very detail oriented, just making sure that we're constantly, you know, in attack mode. She wants to just empower us to feel confident in anything that we do on the court, which is great. And to have such an excited coach for us, it makes us excited to play and to play for her. So, you know, I'm looking forward to playing with these girls, and, you know, our chemistry is growing day by day. So we just have a lot of fun with each other.
How would you describe her? Because you've obviously had a handful of coaches now between high school, college, the pros, the Olympic teams. What's her style like?
She's very intense. I mean, even when you first meet her, you're like, oh, wow, she's, you know, she's very serious, very intense. But at the same time, she has a great sense of humor. But on the court, I mean, it's like a different animal. I've never had, so in high school, I had a female coach, but high school is like high school. I've never had a female head coach before. So it's definitely different, with the way she like approaches it and the way that you can kind of go to her about anything, because we're females, you know, when you have a male head coach, it's kind of weird sometimes. But
is that taking an adjustment for you in a way? Is it not necessarily positive or negative? It just feels different?
Yeah, it is different. Because it's just different in general when you have a new coach. Like, I mean, when I came to the Mystics, too, you know, Coach T, after being with him for a few years, I had learned, you know, he's actually very similar to Coach Auriemma. But when I first started, you know, playing for him, I was like, oh, God, what's he going to be like? Is he going to be mean? Is he going to be, you know, whatever. So it's just, in general, having a new coach is definitely a transition and something you just gotta gauge, you know, when can I make a joke during practice? When should I be serious and focused? And I'm still learning that because sometimes I joke and she's not ready to joke, but you know, I'll learn.
Well, from our brief interactions at the ESPYs and on his and hers, and from all I've read about you, I think we have that in common, that we have a big mouth, we like to crack jokes, and occasionally we guess wrong in terms of when the people around us are really in the mood for that. So I feel you on that one. I definitely feel you. What's your favorite kind of coach? Do you like screamers? Do you like the kind of manipulators that get into your psyche and try to get more out of you? Do you like supportive coaches? What's your favorite kind?
I don't know. I really like a balance. I mean, I'm sure everyone would say that, but I think it's really important to have a coach who will get on you when you need to be, you know, be pushed, but also, you know, be able to encourage you and you know, kind of praise you when you do something really well and, you know, maybe something out of your element. But, like, that was at UConn. I mean, you had Coach Oyema. You kind of knew who was who. You know, you'd walk in the gym. If Oyema didn't have a good attitude, like, if he was in a bad mood, you'd turn and CD would be, like, overly happy. And, you know, Riss would be overly happy. And then Shea might be a little serious. So it's just this balance of, you know, who's in a good mood, who's going to push you that day, but who's going to encourage you and have your back and all that stuff. So, but then I also like a coach who can crack jokes. Like, I don't like people who take things too serious. Like, if you're just serious the whole practice, not to say I'll lose focus, but it's not fun. You know, at the end of the day, we're playing a game. Yes, it's our job, but it's still a game. So I just like to enjoy what we're doing.
So you're filling some big shoes, and you're not really replacing Elena Delanon in the sense that you guys have very different games. But obviously, she was the superstar here in Chicago and the face of the team. Now that's you. You're going to be on a really big front line. 6'7", Imani Boyette, 6'4", Elena Coates, 6'2", Tamara Young, and then you at 6'5". How do you see your role on this team, and do you worry at all about being expected to have the same style or impact as Deladon?
Well, a lot of people have asked me that about the whole replacing Elena. And like you said, we're completely different players in general. Like, our style is different. And I think Coach Stocks knows that. And she wasn't expecting me to come in and, you know, do what Elena did either. But I think it gives us a very different dynamic than they had with Elena. Because, I mean, from what I saw, it was definitely focused on Elena for offense. Now, I mean, we pass the ball really well. We share the ball. But I don't think the team expects me to be like her. I'm just kind of coming in and doing what I'm good at, screening for people, posting up, you know, scoring inside, rebounding, and playing good defense. So with that, everyone's going to kind of have to step up a little bit because they did lose such a big offensive threat. But I think it's a position that everyone's really excited for.
What did you hear about how the deal went down, sending her to Washington and bringing you here to Chicago? I know you were in New York at the time, but did you hear rumblings beforehand, or was it just the rug pulled out from under you?
I was a little surprised, I'm not gonna lie. But I had a feeling it could happen, but I wasn't sure that I really didn't think it would. So I was a little surprised when I got the news, but you know, 3 seasons in D.C., and I felt like we as a team weren't going, you know, we weren't getting better quick enough for this league. So I think that we were kind of plateauing anyway. So after I thought about it, you know, I was excited for a new start, like a fresh beginning with a new team, new city. So I was happy about it. And now after being here, I'm definitely, you know, even more appreciative of this opportunity.
Yeah. So I'm going to read a quick line here from a Vice story that I think was the best at summing up a big issue with the CBA and part of why Deladon forcing her way out wasn't just about wanting to be near her family, but also some kind of restrictions. The CBA doesn't end until October of 2021 right now for the WNBA. Here's what it says. Deladon's rookie contract ended on February 1st of this year, making her a restricted free agent after 4 years in the league. If she'd signed a one-year deal in Chicago and played out 2017, she'd have become an unrestricted free agent next year. Ah, but unrestricted does not in this case mean unrestricted. Teams have the right to designate one player as a core player. They can do this a season at a time to the same player 4 times, and surely this guy would have done so if Deladon hadn't exercised her leverage by threatening to sit out, meaning the first real year she would have been a free agent was 2022, the year she turns 33. So when you look at it that way, it seems almost inconceivable that a player could essentially be stuck on one team from their rookie year until 33, especially in a league that, you know, there isn't, you know, you don't know exactly how long you'll be playing for. Do you feel like most of the players in the league think the current CBA is too restrictive when it comes to player movement?
After hearing that, yeah, probably. Honestly, I don't even think I knew that.
Wait, I feel like a lot of players don't know. Do you think that that's just, this is the only option, and you guys want to play so badly that you just, you're this is the next step, and this is what you do without really understanding even, you know, what you're signing up for?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was just going to say, is, like, I feel like a lot of us are just grateful for the opportunity. You know, we get to come in every day and play basketball for a job. So I guess when you're not in that position of being, you know, like Elena, like a core player who would be there for however many years, you don't really think about that. You know, you just want to make a team, you want to get better, all that stuff. But to hear that, I didn't know that, which is definitely unfortunate. I mean, I think someone should be on a team because they want to be, you know, not because, you know, the CBA or whoever tells them that they kind of have to be. You know, yes, you should be happy to be on a team, but like I said, you should be happy, you know, in whatever city and team you're playing for. So that is tough. I mean, I don't know how or if they could change that, but.
Well, and it also, I think player movement allows for really positive and interesting discussions about a league and its players that you don't really get from the WNBA. There's not a lot of big trades. There's not a lot of movement. And in the offseason of the NBA, we're tied to our Twitter feeds looking at emojis of different modes of transportation as players talk about how they're trying to trap other guys into leaving or coming. We get almost as into the NBA offseason as the actual season, thinking about player movement.
Yeah.
The WNBA doesn't get that because of those restrictions. And like you said, I mean, that CBA goes till 2021, so it's hard to imagine a big change unless there's some sort of lockout. But yeah, I mean, I think reading that, it made you realize that there is not a lot of choice. We've seen it happen in Chicago now twice. Sylvia Fowles and Deladon both forcing their way out. Does that worry you at all in terms of coming here? Where, like, is it something going on in Chicago? Is it just those players weren't happy? Did you think about that at all?
A little, but not, I mean, not really. For me, everyone's different. Everyone has, you know, personal issues or choices and priorities that matter more to them than other people. So for me, I didn't really consider it. I can usually get along with most people and usually enjoy wherever I am, but I don't know. I don't really know, like, the inside stories of why it happened with the two of them. You know, it's just a personal choice, and you know, their choices don't affect me, so I just kind of went with it.
Right. Unless they get you forced into a deal that sends you to a new city, in which case you have to handle it the best you can, right?
That's very true. Yeah, exactly.
So you spent half the offseason in China and then half doing an internship in New York City for Bobby Brown Cosmetics. That sounds like a pretty big whirlwind couple months. Which one took a bigger adjustment, playing in China or working in makeup?
Oh, I don't know. Both of them were pretty hard. First of all, China was definitely difficult. The time difference, the fact that it's only one American per team, it was really a really hard transition, but I actually really enjoyed it. My team was great. The girls tried to speak English, and we kind of communicated through, like, just facial expressions and, you know, hand motions and make a lot of jokes. So that was a lot of fun. But then the tough part about the internship was just not even that I was in makeup, just having a real job.
Yeah.
I honestly have so much more respect for people. I mean, like, people with 9-to-5 jobs. I mean, I lived with my sister in Jersey, so I had to commute. But it's not even that bad of a commute. But I was up at 6 a.m., didn't get back home till like 8 p.m., and then I had to go work out. How do the regular people do this? Like,
I have a friend. I have a friend who was an Olympian twice in pole vault, and like she went to business school, so she was 36 and going to her very first job, and she was like, "Nope, I hate this." And I was like, "Hello, welcome to the rest of our lives."
Yeah, it's really different. Like, I feel like athletes, we just don't realize, you know, what a real 9-to-5 feels like. And so to have that, I mean, midday, like 2 p.m., I was like, can I have a break? I need coffee. I'm exhausted, you know, but it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed living with my sister, you know, being in makeup. I love, you know, fashion and all that stuff. And I just like to make people feel good about themselves and, you know, kind of get all dolled up. So I enjoyed it a lot. But I am glad to be back to my basketball career.
Right. Do you see a future after you're done with hoops in something like fashion or cosmetics? Because I know you do talk a lot about how you're big into fashion stuff.
I do. I really do. I'm not sure how or what you know, what angle yet, but being on a team with Cappy is great. I really want to, you know, talk to her about what she's been doing and how she got into it, and hopefully get an opportunity to do something with her. But otherwise, I'm not sure. I don't know. I love fashion. Like I said, for me, it's about body image and just making people feel good about themselves, and young girls, you know, look up to us. And I just want to make sure people, you know, have a healthy lifestyle. But I think getting a little dressed up and doing your makeup and hair is always fun and kind of adds that little, you know, good feeling at the end. So yeah. I don't know. I'll see what happens.
You said in an ESPN The Magazine story, I'm 6'5", and I dye my hair purple and experiment a lot with fashion. My motto is, if they're going to stare, they might as well stare at something fun. Did it take you time to come to that decision that you were okay with your height, you were okay with people staring, and that it would be something that you sort of embraced instead of shying away from?
Absolutely. It definitely took time. I actually thought about it when I was in New York City. It was like, I think my first year in college, maybe, I stayed with my sister. I stayed with my sister in the city, and I just felt so many people staring at me, and I was so uncomfortable. I would get nervous and, you know, red and embarrassed because just so many people stared and said little comments. And then thinking about that and then being in the city, you know, this past spring, it was like a completely different person. I walked with my head held high, you know, shoulders back. And just embrace people staring, and, you know, because I'm so much more confident in myself and my height and all that stuff, that I can just kind of take it in and not even think about the people who are staring. But it did take me a long time, and a lot of, you know, self-growth that I went through, and, you know, I'm happy where I am now, though.
Yeah, I'm certain that for a lot of people it takes it's internal in a way of just saying, look, this is what I get, right? This is who I am. So what's the point in worrying about it so much? I'm not getting a different body or a different face or a different hair or different height, but also validation from the outside. So that's your body as your job, right? Your body is a tool for you. And when you combine all those together, it makes it a little bit easier. But did you feel like part of that also was growing up and everybody around you accepting themselves for whatever they are, and then that you just go along with them? Because for me, I feel like some of it is just that kids are cruel, and we're also insecure as we come up about whatever makes us unique, and then we get older and we're like, wait, that's cool that I'm unique.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, when I was younger, I was, people who know me now, they're like, I don't believe you. I was shy. Like, I really didn't like talking to people. You know, I was always kind of hunched over and just, I didn't want to step outside my box, you know, to give other kids that opportunity to say anything or do anything to me. So, yeah, like you said, though, when you get older, when you meet certain people who, for whatever reason or however they got there, don't care about what anyone thinks about them, it definitely rubs off on you. And you're just like, wow, you know, when, especially when you get into a sport. I think that's why sports are so important for kids. It's like, it shows you, you know, if you have a talent or something that's different from someone else, it helps you, you know, and that was for me, my height. Basketball kind of gave me that place where I was like, okay, I'm like really good at this, and my height is helpful, you know? So, you know, being on a team with a lot of girls who are confident in themselves definitely helped kind of rub off on me and help me, you know, get to this point too.
Yeah, for sure. Were you, when were you, how old were you when you became super tall?
I was always really tall. Like, I didn't really have a huge growth spurt. I was like always, you know, school pictures, I was always the tallest, even as a kid. And then, you know, middle school, I was already 6'3",
oh
you know,
gosh.
By eighth grade.
Yeah.
So I was like always tall. And then in high school, I finally kind of get the last few inches.
Yeah.
To be 6'5".
And now you go by Big Mama Steph, so you're embracing it. Where did that nickname come from?
Shout out to my best friend, Kevin. I have no idea. It's just, I'm a naturally motherly person. I just want to make sure everyone's okay. Everyone, you know, is together as a family and all that fun stuff. And one day he was just like, I don't know, he just called me Big Mama Steph. And he was like, it was kind of when Twitter started. and I think it was when we were in college, it was starting to get popular, and I didn't even have one. And he was like, you should be Big Mama Steph. And then just took off from there.
That was it? Yeah. So about a year ago, just a little bit over a year ago to this day, in ESPN the magazine, you talked publicly about your sexuality and talked about how you're into a person and not a gender, what it's like to be an LGBT athlete in the WNBA. And it felt like the conversation around that revelation was either, okay, who cares? This is happening all the time. Or let's stop talking about this. This isn't information that we need. And it's hard to tell what people's, what the impetus is for those things. Are you really feeling like it's not necessary because who cares, or because you don't want to hear it, because you'd rather not acknowledge it? Were you nervous about sharing your story and what the reaction would be?
Not really. You know, my family, the only people I ever cared about knowing that stuff really was my family. And they already knew that before the article. So for me, it was just about letting people know a totally different perspective. I think because people, you know, especially in the world, it's just like straight or gay, you know, and obviously there's other in LGBTQ, other letters now in, you know, the world, but people don't really understand it or care to know about it. So for me, it was just to kind of let people know my story and, you know, how I've come to kind of find my sexuality as a person, because it wasn't something, you know, that I was necessarily born with. I just, you know, being in this society and how open people are and how comfortable people are, I just kind of grew to be like that. You know, I just realized that gender didn't matter to me and that I would just love, you know, I was attracted to a person's, you know, a personality and energy. And so it was just important for me to, I don't know, just let people have an inside look of how I came to kind of discover that in myself. But I didn't really worry about how people reacted. I knew, you know, any information you put out there, people are going to react the way they want to. And to me, it didn't really matter.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned it sort of, I would say even probably about 12 years ago, I kind of thought that bisexual was like a made up thing. I just didn't really understand it because I was, had been in, you know, the influx of information was always straight or gay, left or right. And obviously the conversation now is about a spectrum. And when you view it in terms of not about gender, but about personality or energy or aura or pheromones or whatever, it becomes clear, of course, that there's a giant spectrum. And even the straightest of people are not the same as people who are straight and usually are with one gender, but sometimes are interested in another. And there's a giant stretch of differences. I mean, what's interesting to me is that despite the stereotypes about female athletes and lesbians and the conversation around it at the time, you were the first WNBA player to come out publicly in over a year, which then when you look at it that way, then it seems still necessary, especially for people coming up and people who want to find somebody to identify with it. And maybe it's what city you're from, what sport you play, what you look like, that separates you from everybody else that has come out. And you're the one that they connect to.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of think of it as like what you just said of how some people in the league maybe think like, well, why am I sharing this? Well, people are probably sick of hearing, you know, that a player in the WNBA is gay or you know, bisexual, whatever it is. But I felt like because I'm a little different, to me it was important to come out as that. Because I had a lot of young girls who reached out to me after I did the article about, they were kind of confused of what they were. They're like, I didn't know I was bisexual. I didn't even know that was a thing. Like all this stuff. And they, you know, really responded to it positively. And so I think it was important to get a different view of it. I don't know. I'm just really proud of myself for doing it. And, you know, I do hope it sparks other girls or other women in the WNBA to, you know, speak their story and get it out there. And but at the same time, you know, people are private, so I'd understand that too.
Yeah.
But, so yeah.
You know, we talk about this a lot at ESPNW, yeah. The changes in coaching dynamics on the collegiate level, higher salaries and more prestige means that there's more of an influx of male coaches and numbers of women coaches, especially in women's college basketball, are going down. And also that there's, I think, only one out female coach in college basketball, Division I, mainly over concerns about recruiting and fears about parents who might have antiquated views about coaches or about their daughters joining a team that would have a lesbian coach and whether that would influence them. When you were in college, when you were being recruited or when even when you were playing for Geno at UConn, were there conversations about that stuff amongst teammates or parents? Did it feel like it was an issue?
Absolutely not. I never heard anyone say that. And to hear that, that's disappointing. I would hope that people wouldn't think that, especially when, you know your child just loves basketball. And to know that, you know, they may have those stereotypes in their heads about college coaches or would think that it would, you know, be detrimental to their kids playing. No, we never discussed that, never heard of anything like that. But I guess, I mean, it does happen in this world. It's unfortunate, but I honestly don't even know what to say because it's sad to hear that.
It is sad. There's conversation about having actually two closets. Like one is the clothes that the coaches wear in their social life out with friends and those that they're out to. And one is what they wear to try to feminize themselves in order to take meetings or go to events. And it's kind of remarkable in 2017 that they would be, I believe it still is, just the one out female coach in Division I basketball. Sort of surprising. Can you share if you're single now? Should the city of Chicago be aware that you're on the prowl?
I am single, but I'm not sure I'm on the prowl as much as just enjoying myself, you know, doing the whole, you know, new year, new me thing and just enjoying the city of Chicago.
Okay, good. Keeping your options open.
Absolutely. Always keeping my options open. You always have to do that. And with a child now as Theo, my dog, my life is pretty much taken up by him fully. So
yes,
I don't even have time to do anything else.
Anyone new would need to accept your role as a single dog mother and be able to adjust accordingly.
Absolutely. Which means he sleeps on the bed and you're on the couch.
Right, exactly. So your Twitter bio has this quote. Why is it so meaningful to you? It says, if you want to know where your heart is, look to where your mind goes when it wanders.
Yes. Well, it's true. I don't know. A lot of times, you know, I've actually been into meditation lately, but even before I started meditating, I like to spend time by myself. I like to just go somewhere, sit down, maybe draw or even just think. And I feel like wherever your mind goes is where your heart is, what makes you happy, what inspires you, whatever it is, it's just where your mind goes naturally. You know, nothing that you're forcing yourself to think about, stressing about, any of that. It's just when there's no one around, just you and whatever, you know, bench you're sitting on, you know, that's just what you're thinking.
I like that.
What's important to you.
I like that.
For my sister.
Yeah, good. So what are your expectations for this season with the Sky? What, if you had to write down on a piece of paper before the season started, I want this many wins or I want this, what are you realistically hoping for?
Well, I absolutely want to make it to playoffs. Mm-hmm. I think we have a lot of talent, a lot of depth. I mean, we have so much depth. No matter who subs in, is just as good as the next player. We do have it's tough without Sloot and Quigley because of their national teams. We have two rookie point guards, which is tough because, I mean, a point guard is, you know, the leader of your team on the court. But they're working really hard. So I just want to make, you know, want to make playoffs, want to get over 50% of wins. and then kind of take it from there.
When do Quigley and Vandersloot get back?
I'm not sure. I want to say, well, I know they get back soon, but then they have to leave again for the Nationals. I think it's in June. I think they were gone most of the month of June.
Got it.
Maybe like 2 or 3 weeks, I think.
Yeah, and it's a pretty young team beyond some of those vets.
Yeah, it is. We split up into vets. Coach Amber said anyone with 4 or less years go to one side and everyone above go to the right. And we only had like 3 on the right.
Do you like immediately made a veteran on a team where you don't know anyone or the city you're playing in?
I actually do. I like that. Like to be grown. I like to be the older one.
Yeah.
So I was at.
Well, you're Big Mama Steph, so you naturally want to be the team mama anyway.
Exactly. It just comes to me, you know?
Well, before we let you go, there is one more thing you have to do.
I didn't expect the kind of Spanish Inquisition. Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition.
That's right, the Spanish Inquisition, the 7 questions I ask everybody on my podcast. Number 1, what is the natural talent you'd like to be gifted with?
Being able to jump higher.
You got no hops?
I can't jump.
No.
No.
Thank God you're so tall.
All the girls are like, right, everyone's like, can you dunk? I'm like, girl, look at me. No. I can't jump.
What is your desert island album? You can only have one.
Beyonce's Lemonade.
It's a good one. Good.
Thank you.
Number 3, if you could switch lives with someone for a day, who would it be?
Ooh. Ellen DeGeneres.
Ooh, good one. Yeah, she has a cool job and she gets to meet lots of famous people and dance a lot.
Exactly.
Number 4, what's the most scared you've ever been?
Probably I went skydiving. I want to say like 20 maybe, 21 with my 2 sisters and a friend. And, I was scared, but I was excited.
Would you do it again?
Absolutely. I want to do it again.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I always wanted to, and then I read one too many stories about it, and now I think I'm good. I think I'm okay.
Yeah. I just don't read those.
Yeah. Number 5, what habit or quality do you think has contributed most to your success?
Oh, gosh. I have no idea. To my success? What? I don't know. Maybe my quick learning skills? Like, I can pick up a play. If you give it to me once or twice, I pick it up like that and I'll remember it all season. Nice. So I don't know, I guess that.
Are you also someone who remembers what people say pretty well? Because I remember my coaches used to love that I could pick up on the plays and all that really quickly, but then hate it if I 3 weeks after they said something and they said something different, I would say, wait, before you told us this and now you want us, and they'd be like, Spain, shut up. Stop remembering everything word for word.
Oh, see, maybe I am like that. Yeah. See, it's weird. I'm like 2 different people. On the court, I remember everything. But then if we get off the court, you say, hey, Steph, could you remind me to do this? Nope.
Yeah. Yeah.
I won't remember. I will.
But your coaches are like, quit being a lawyer. Like, let me do my thing. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit.
Number 6, what's the thing about yourself you'd most like to improve?
Probably my natural tan. No, I'm just kidding. but not really. It's very pale right now. Something I like to improve on myself. I don't know.
That's You're perfect in every way.
Exactly.
So not your confidence. That's good.
Definitely not. Not anymore. You asked me that 5 years ago, I would have said that.
There you go. And finally, what 3 words would you most hope people would use to describe you?
Outgoing. Funny. I like to think about that. I like to hope. And sensitive.
Those are 3 good ones. I like those.
Thank you. Thanks.
Outgoing, funny, and sensitive. Well, hopefully Chicago will get to know you. and think those things about you. And we look forward to seeing you play and enjoying the city when it's not 45 degrees.
Right.
Go get some pizza and then tweet about how amazing it is.
I will. And cheesecake. Someone yes. Tell me the cheesecake here.
Eli's cheesecake, Garrett's popcorn, deep dish pizza, Chicago dog, you know, all that stuff. Perfect for your training before the season starts.
He's so fat. Exactly.
We got to make some sort of famous Chicago salad, just even if it's a lie. We just got to tell people that. Awesome. Well, thanks for making time for me, Steph.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
That's what she said.
Oh, and another thing.
So bringing back my new feature called That's What She Read, there's a story up on ESPNW.com. And if you just search ESPNW Sports Business Leadership, it'll probably come up. It's kind of a long URL, but it's career lessons taught to us by top U.S. marketing executives. And it stems from our big ESPNW summit in Chicago here last week. It was a one-day summit that I hosted. It kind of replicates a little bit of what we do every year in the fall in Southern California. And that's a three-day summit. It's much bigger, but this is a little smaller approximation of it with all sorts of incredible female athletes, executives, marketing people, anybody who is interested in even beyond sports, sort of female empowerment and leadership, best practices. I had a great conversation with Kerry Wood, formerly of the Cubs, talking about his famous 20 strikeout game, what it's like to work for this current Cubs organization, what it was like to be a part of last year's World Series run. So you can find that video on ESPNW.com if you just search for me and Kerry Wood. But I really like this particular story that I read because that was probably my favorite panel of the day, were these top U.S. marketing executives from some of the country's most high-profile companies talking about their advice for getting ahead, how to find success at work, how to balance work and life, mentorship, you know, things they've learned from failure. And if you listen to my pod, you know, I'm super interested in all those things and in kind of soaking up great advice from really powerful and successful people. And so I'll read you a little quick snippet from the story, the section on failure and courage. So Becky Frankowitz, she's a senior VP and general manager at Quaker Foods New York. She said this: "We have to start talking about failures. My favorite acronym for fail is actually first attempt in learning. I absolutely try to live that way." And it reminded me of my conversation with Sarah Robb O'Hagan a couple podcasts ago, where she wrote, talked about writing in her new book, how many failures she had when she got fired, what it did for her, how it helped her move forward, and actually reaching out to successful people and asking them to share their own failures with her. Because it's so important for people up and coming to realize that people don't get rich and successful and famous because they did everything right every single time. That every person that you've seen at the top of their game at some point stumbled and made a mistake and did something wrong. And if they talk to you about that stuff as well as the good stuff, it makes it easier to envision your own path. And so I love that Becky Frankowitz had something similar, talking about failures being so important. Allison Cerullo, General Managing Consumer Marketing at Edelman, said this. She said, "I probably failed the most in times where I focused too much on what the next thing is instead of just doing a really, really good job of being in the moment and doing good work. Ambition is awesome. Risking is great and it gets you really far. But being in the moment and really learning and really absorbing and listening to other people is a good balance." And I'd argue that sometimes people who are too ambitious and are too ready to get to the next thing, first of all, are never satisfied with where they are. And that's not a very good existence. You're never actually happy with what you have, but also are doing a poorer job in the moment of the job that they have because they're already moving on to the job that they want in their heads. And that they're less likely to get what it is that they want in the future if they don't figure out how to nail the thing that they already have and be present in that moment. And I always say, of course, ambition is important, but if you're never satisfied with where you are because your ambition is too overwhelming, then what's the end goal? What's the point? You're never going to be happy. So I thought that was really powerful. And then Lizette Williams, she was the multicultural marketing leader at Kimberly-Clark, New York, said, "One of my favorite quotes, I have the saying over my desk, is true courage is not the absence of fear. It is acting in spite of it." So it's not that I'm not scared. A lot of times I have to stand up at a meeting and I have to say something so uncomfortable in a room of people that look nothing like me, but I know it's the right thing to do for the company and I know it's the right thing to do for our consumers. And when she talked about that, of course, we all thought about the instances where companies have publicly struggled because they didn't have a diversity of voices in the room. They didn't have enough representatives to say, this is a bad idea and here's why. And Lizette's job is in part to be able to speak to a large, you know, to be a steward for the consumers that she represents and works for. And that can be uncomfortable if it's a room full of people that don't look like you and you have to step up and say, this isn't going to work. But we've seen the fallout of, especially very recently, of a couple big brand campaigns and ads that failed in part because they didn't have enough people saying, wait a minute, this isn't going to work. And have the power and the confidence to stand up and say that. So the rest of the advice is equally as good. And like I said, you can find it on ESPNW.com. The headline is Career Lessons Learned from Top U.S. Marketing Executives. But if you just search ESPNW Chicago Summit 2017, you'll find out a whole bunch of stuff. Tons of videos from that day, professional athletes talking about body image, and strategies from women entrepreneurs, all sorts of great stuff. So I highly recommend you check it out. And thanks as always for lasting about an hour with me.
That's what she said.